The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. Scott Beck, president of Beck's, is my guest. He oversees the largest family-owned seed company in the country. We talk about how he went from being the 12th employee at the business to now overseeing the operation with over 700 employees. How can independent seed companies survive and thrive in the world of large multinational firms? It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. 2019 performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. For more information on Pivot BioProven, text PROVEN to 31313. Last week, I was in Atlanta, Indiana for a TV interview with Scott Beck, president of Beck's, the largest family-owned seed company in the country. What you'll hear on this podcast is some of the audio from that TV interview. Certainly, Scott would like for folks who listen to this podcast to consider using his seed on their farms, but this interview is really about topics much bigger than corn or soybeans. Part of our focus was on the specific practices Scott and his family have put in place in order to help their company grow in a time in which many of the competitors are large multinational firms. We discussed why he decided to come into the family-owned business during the middle of the 1980s farm crisis. Not only did we cover ground that I think is interesting in the history of Beck's, but many of the ideas certainly transfer to those of us operating businesses of any size. We did our interview in the company's museum in front of a tractor with special meaning to the family.
Scott, why don't I start with this? You know, we've got this tractor here behind us. Yeah. We could trace the beginning of your family's history in farming back to different places, but this tractor has to be a center point, kind of looking at the history, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a center point because this is the first tractor that my father, Sonny, learned to drive. And so he drove that back in the when he was a child. He was born in 1940. And so growing up, it was something that he was used to driving and learned how to farm on that tractor.
So go back to the era then of this tractor. You know, we're going back to the 1930s. Kind of how and why did your, Ben, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, how and why did they get started with hybrid corn?
Well, my great-grandfather settled on 80 acres that our current facilities is at here in the northern part of Hamilton County in 1901. And so he began then to save the best years from his open pollinated corn to sell to his friends and neighbors and use, you know, for his own seed the following year. Well, 1937, Purdue was offering the new innovation to farmers called hybrid seed. And so my grandfather and great-grandfather each got a three-acre allotment of that parent seed. And that 6 acres was the first crop of Beck Superior Hybrids back in 1937.
When you visited with them about those early years, what made them want to do that? What was so special about that hybrid corn and then growing it for others back then?
Well, one of the things that I remember my grandfather saying was that it wasn't necessarily all about additional yield. Certainly that was part of it, but it was more about the consistency, the ear height, the standability, some of those things that back in those days when they were hand harvesting made a big difference.
How much of their time then was spent on developing those hybrids? Because these early days, they're running a farm besides, but I guess over time they just began to decide this is what we want to do and we want to concentrate on that then?
Yeah, and the breeding and the development was not something they did early. They sourced those from, you know, public, Purdue and eventually other companies that were doing their own breeding and product development. Today, we have our own breeding program, along with sourcing genetics and traits from all the major suppliers in the world.
This is where you grew up, right? Your family, right here in the midst of now what is the headquarters for this operation, correct?
Yeah, the White House on the property was one that my grandfather grew up in, And I grew up in until I was age about age 10, and when my parents built another house. So yeah, there's been three generations that have lived in that White House.
You know, sometimes history is something that weighs us down, and we can't move forward to the mm-hmm. future. How does history work at Beck's? Because to me, it looks like history is, in a sense, your strength as you look to the future, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there's a saying that I remember years ago when Lee Rulin was our sales manager and led our dealer organization. It was honor the past, live the present, plan the future. And so we are, I think, very much in tune with our roots and the history and honoring the things that certainly God has provided through our family and the means to do what we do, the innovations that we have from Purdue to do hybrid seed production, the cropping advancements that have been made that allows us to continue to grow. And so, yeah, honoring the past, recognizing the values, the traditions, the things that have got us to where we are today, and then utilizing those as well as other new things as we move into the future.
Because you grew up in this, was there ever any doubt in your mind, this is what I want to do?
When I went to Purdue, I wasn't exactly sure. And so I eventually got into agronomy and studied agronomy, and graduated with a degree in agronomy, but also took quite a few electives in advertising, sales and marketing, creative writings. Always had a little bit of a creative flair. And so upon graduation, I did return, but was not exactly sure that this was where God wanted me. But I guess through the years and through continuing to search His will for my life, it's become pretty clear that God does have a plan for us and our business, and I enjoy seeing how other employees are able to live out their faith here in this environment.
As I think about Beck's, you know, you mentioned faith, family, friends, these type of things. Mm-hmm. They are the foundation of what you do there, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, we owe everything to our Creator, and He's given us land and resources to steward, and as we utilize those ultimately to bring Him glory, that's how we see success. And we have you might say our goals are the way that we see the foundation of the company, certainly honoring God, having a mindset of helping others, and then we have what we call attitudes and actions, and that's kind of the behaviors and the attitudes that we work diligently to make sure we hire the right employees that display those attitudes and actions, recognize when employees are, living out those attitudes and actions, and things like teamwork, integrity, innovation, adaptability, commitment, and passion.
Not that we are necessarily comparing you against other companies, mm-hmm. but certainly you have to because it's a competitive marketplace. So what does all of this family, this tradition, what does that mean in the marketplace, do you think, to Beck's? Because it's a good way to do business, but what does that mean as you're out mm-hmm. selling seed and marketing seed to others?
Yeah. Well, we are who we are, and we believe that others who see the world as we do and align with those things will naturally enjoy and migrate towards doing business in the way that we do, and they'll see value in it. And so it's who we are, and those who, I guess, appreciate the things that we do, and I think one of the differentiators is that we've been able to, even through the growth through the years, we've been able to keep a focus on the farmer and understanding what are the things that are important to the farmer, and then what can we do to meet those needs.
Whenever you think about that, then how does that play out as far as how you interact with farmers, how you know the folks that you have out in the field interact with farmers? There is a different feel, in a good way, about Beck's, I believe, and I know that's not by accident that that's happened.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've been inspired by is that over the last 21 months, I've had the opportunity to meet with every employee. So 711 employees for a 27-minute conversation. And one of the most common things that they'll tell me is that they like how we're a large and growing company, but we still have a small company feel. So that small company feel comes because people feel valued, and they know that they matter, and the work they do matters. And so, you know, through the course of that conversation, I got to hear from every employee on how they connect what they're doing with our business purpose of helping farmers succeed. And so, you know, when you have a group of employees that enjoy coming to work, like the people they work with, and see how their contributions are making a difference, that is really the tools or the groundwork for a great culture.
So when you think about improving, what is it then that every day keeps you going? Certainly it's a family business, and yep. I'm in a family business, so that part keeps us going. But what things excite you about the business that you're in?
Well, certainly, you know, I believe that companies don't grow. People do. People grow. Okay, and as people grow, that impacts the company. And so we've made, a more diligent and disciplined effort over the last 5 to 10 years to invest more in our employees in terms of not just skills training, but life skills training, communication training, listening skills, dealing with conflict, personality tests. And so it's really about, you know, attracting the right people and then getting them on the right seat on the bus and then investing in them and helping them to get to the places that they want to go within the guardrails or the direction of our company.
So we've been talking for a bit here, and we've yet to mention anything about a corn or soybean seed. So do you think that everything that we've talked about, is it in a sense more important or has to be done first before you ever get to the corn or soybean seed then in this company?
Well, it's our people that are making that happen. And so, yes, we need the right talent and skills. Some of that has to come from a PhD level of education. Some of it comes just from life experience. And, you know, we've got mentorships going on here in the company to help give employees experience in other areas and you know, test out whether they like this type of work or not. So, yeah, it does revolve around the people. But it's the people who build the buildings, who plant the seed, who evaluate the crop, who do the processing, who do all the work.
So we've talked about the history, but obviously you've got to be focused on the future too. So as you come to work every day, then how do you have a balance of, okay, we have this wonderful family story that's very important, but we do know we have to be competitive, we have to be future thinking. So how do you balance those two as you come to work every day?
One of the things that I think about as I rewind into history a little bit is that we were very similar to other family-owned businesses back in the 70s, you know, 60s, 70s, and 80s. You know, hundreds of family-owned seed businesses. But what was the differentiator that has allowed us to be here, not just surviving, but thriving? And it comes down to a couple things. One is focus. We've been able to stay focused on the farmer. And then the second thing would be leadership, and those are kind of intertwined. But we have many good leaders within the company. And so focusing on the farmer and then building leaders within throughout the organization has enabled us to, I guess, continue to grow. The focus on the farmer has given us some of our, I guess, strategies or tactical ways of how we engage with the farmer and provide more value from a business standpoint. If you ask any farmer how many seed brands they plant, it's somewhere usually between 2 to 3. Okay, why? The number one answer is diversity. They want to make sure they get the diversity that they need on their farm. So we've set up our business model to where we are working with all of the major genetic and trait suppliers in the world to provide that diversity. So we can be a one-stop shop for any farmer within our geography because we've got the products and the diversity of the genetics and traits that they can choose from. The other things would be investment. When you think about the difference between us as a family-owned business and a publicly traded company, the focus of the investment is different. Publicly traded companies have to get their funding outside the company and then invest back in those shareholders with dividends or interest or what, you know, whatever their form of payment is. We have the benefit of being able to take our profits and invest them back in the farmers that are giving us their business. And so we do that in a variety of ways. One, our practical farm research, which we wouldn't have to do that, but because, you know, we say we're farmers at heart, we love to find new and innovative ways to farm and to do things better for the next year. And so that type of research is what we do, and we've learned and continue to learn better ways of sharing that information and knowledge with farmers. And so that comes at a cost, but it's part of the investment we make in the farmers we're doing business with. And the other thing, you don't even have to be a customer to benefit from Practical Farm Research. So we talk about our purpose being helping farmers succeed. We truly are helping farmers succeed whether they ever buy a bag of seed, if they, you know, choose to look at the information and gain from it.
The feedback that you get from farmers, what do they notice, do you think?
I think they get a strong sense that we really care, and that we're not just in it to sell them a bag of seed. In fact, you know, one of the early practices, I don't even know if my grandpa had called it a policy back then, but he had a practice of providing 100% free replant seed for any farmer that needed to replant for any reason, even if it was the farmer messed up in how he set his planter. So we've continued that practice today, because we've one of the things that he said was, you know, we're not selling you a bag of corn, we're offering you a stand of corn. Okay, so that replant guarantee goes through that early stand period, and we will replace that free of charge.
How do you think that you continue to develop that policy over time? Things evolve, so as we mentioned, history is important, but how do you continue to do that, you think, moving forward and continue to help BEX grow over time?
Yeah. You know, that particular policy is a much more costly policy today. Now that the bag of seed is, you know, more than a couple $100 a bag, we give larger discounts than what Grandpa charged for those first bags of seed. So we've made, a much deeper investment. When a farmer needs to replant, he still has total control over that decision, but we've made much more investment in helping him, providing him with tools to figure out whether it's the right economic decision to replant, or whether it's just what you want to do because you don't want to see that poor stand of corn beside your house all summer. You know, it might be the right economic decision to leave that 22,000 seeds per acre on, you know, a late May planting, or in late May versus trying to replant in June, in terms of economics. But so those are the things we're trying to do to make sure the farmer has all the information before making that decision.
You mentioned your grandpa, and yep. I think grandpas and farms are important. What is it, in the sense, that your grandpa still tells you today? Because my grandpa, even though he's been gone for several years, still tells me stuff today. What is it he tells you today in operating this business?
He had a very strong work ethic, and I think that, along with, he grew up during the Depression, and so things were very tight, and they lived a very frugal life in many areas. Now, you come here today, and you don't necessarily see frugality. You see, we built a business, you know, and we built a business to last. From the facility standpoint, we've already talked about the people, but we've made significant investment in facilities. Seed corn production and processing is a capital intensive business, and so, you know, to provide the best products, the best service, the best quality, we've got to make a significant investment to do that.
What does at the heart of it mean? Because that's a phrase you hear a lot with Becks.
Yeah. What's at the core? What matters? That's how I see it.
So when a farmer deals with Becks, mm-hmm. how do they see it? You've alluded to some of that, but how do they see at the heart of it when they deal with Becks?
I think most farmers will feel a sense of warmth and welcoming when they come on the property or when they interact with our people. And it's because we really are, I think, at the heart, very generous and open with information, knowledge, and the desire to help. And so you see that reflected in our practical farm research, again, that we do offer that knowledge free of charge. Commitment rewards program, that's something that we give as a means of thanking the customer for their business. And so I think you'll see that farmers will feel like they're welcome here and that we want them to be in we want to be in a relationship with them, and that at the end of the day, the things that we put together can most likely help them in their operation.
As you look to the future, then what's the key to continuing to this growth and continuing to, not only with the technology, but the customer base, what's the key to it all?
Things are becoming more complex, and so leadership's responsibility is to kind of take all that complexity and make it simple, and so that we can communicate it, and so people can kind of latch onto it and say, yeah, I catch the vision of what you're doing, I see what you're saying, I want to go there too.
If I'm doing my math right,
yep.
You graduated from Purdue in the later 80s.
Yes, 87.
1987, I know, we talked about FFA earlier on. 1987 was the low point in FFA membership. 1987, a lot of my friends' families had options because they lost their farms.
Yep.
So 1987, in a sense, you have a choice of, am I coming back into this family business or what I'm going to do? So take me back to 1987. Why, at that point, do you eventually decide I want to be here?
Yeah. So, you know, growing up in the family business, it was opportunity. You know, was there opportunity to go somewhere else? There certainly would have been. You know, there were things that I enjoyed about growing up. I got my degree in agronomy. Again, with the other electives around sales and marketing, advertising, creative writing, some of those things. And so when I came back and, you know, Dad and I had a conversation, I saw that, okay, there is a place here, you know. And so not knowing for sure if this is where I would be long term, the majority of that really was revolved around where I was in my faith at that point. I was searching, God, do you have something else for me? You know, and it was open to that calling in a different area if he did. And so I started working in the business. You know, back then I was a number 12 employee. And so we all wore a lot of hats, did a lot of different jobs. I spent after getting my degree from Purdue, I spent my first 2 weeks detasseling. So not exactly what every college grad aspires to do, but that was obviously a short-term thing. But then eventually got into I oversaw our advertising, oversaw our practical farm research, was in charge of our shipping. And in those days, I wasn't just setting up deliveries, I was taking deliveries. So it was a great opportunity to get out and meet with farmers and our customers, you know, throughout the state, and get to know the landscape of the area that we're serving farmers in. And so the practical farm research, probably as much as anything, was something that I really enjoyed. And especially as my responsibilities got more on the business side, you know, the spring of the year was the time I really looked forward to, because I got to go out and put my seat on my rear end on the seat of the tractor and plant our practical farm research plots. And so I really enjoyed that. It was kind of like having a 2 week vacation. Hard work, you know, early mornings and late nights, but it was a lot of fun. And I really enjoy that aspect of learning. In other words, setting up the study to see, you know, what can we learn from this experiment, you know, and maybe we add a couple more things here to try to, you know, get as much out of that study as we can. And so you know, being able to not only plan, but plant, scout, you know, see the project through all the way to the final data and the publication in our plot book was very rewarding to me. And so those are some of the things that I think, I don't necessarily do that today, but that's what, that's where I see a lot of value in what we do for farmers.
One of the items I want to highlight from our interview is the practical farm research Scott mentioned. If you're not familiar with this research, BEX does many studies every year on a multitude of topics that relate to decisions that farmers are facing. These are not field trials of new seeds. Sure, they do those. But this is research about things like tillage, herbicides, organic production, and much, much more. I'd encourage you to look at some of those studies. There's lots of good information there. Research that, as Scott mentioned, they continue to do because they are farmers at heart. That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.